You are listening to the eWatchman Podcast with your host, Robert King.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Watchmen Podcast. This episode was recorded for the second week of September. I hope everyone is well. Not really a whole lot going on in the world this past week. It's been sort of quiet, really, since the BP gusher got plugged, apparently. Now they're just doing the PR cleanup on the whole mess. Interesting. I saw that BP came out with their report today, and surprisingly, they're pointing the finger at Halliburton and the other drilling company that was they were contracting for. That company, wow, don't get me started on BP. It's sort of a quiet period, though, in the world. It's a horrendous disaster in Pakistan that it's going to take years to recover from the flood. The worrying thing, I read an article in the FT, Financial Times, that some observers, analysts, whatever you want to call them, are worried that this is going to tip Pakistan over and an uprising of radical fundamentalist Islam could conceivably overthrow a weakened government, and that would be a big, big problem because Pakistan, for some bizarre reason, is a nuclear power. In every other respect, they're considered a third world country, extremely backward, poverty stricken, but somehow they got the nukes. I wonder who gave them to them. I don't know. Probably not hard to figure out, though. So it's sort of the calm before the storm. Something has got to give. You've probably heard about the controversy of going on in New York. They want to build a mosque at Ground Zero, and of course that's got all the Americans up in arms because the hijackers were driven by Islamic extremism. And on the flip side of that, this clown preacher in Florida wants to have a Quran book burning party. And so, yeah, it's the clash of civilization. I mean, they're trying. Somebody's really, really working very hard to set off the clash of civilization, as Samuel Huntington called it, one of the CFR guys, but it takes a lot of work, to get a big world war going. But actually, it could only take a little spark, like World War I started with an assassin's bullet. So I don't know exactly how it'll play out, but at some point we'll probably get another massive terrorist incident, perhaps this time with a weapon of mass destruction, and that will change the world in the blink of an eye. Well, I usually take questions, and that's the format of the program. My question inbox has sort of been empty lately. I've got a couple here. In fact, I got one off of my Facebook account. Someone who has been reading eWatchman for quite a few years, and he ended up leaving the Watchtower. He was raised as one of Jehovah's Witnesses. He said his parents were very strong. He was a hardcore, he called it. He were hardcore Jehovah's Witness, whatever that means. But he left and got involved in some worldly things, but he's cleaned all of that up. But he feels like the organization is a cult, and it's very controlling, and he doesn't want to subject himself to its little tyranny. On the other hand, he says that when Jesus' true presence occurs, will there be any chance for us? And he says, will the 3.5 years of work by the two anointed witnesses give us a chance to become approved? And he says, clearly no one has the mark of the beast yet. So, and he mentioned that there were thousands of others like himself, and he's right about that, unfortunately. You know, at some point, I'm afraid that there are going to be more ex-Jehovah's Witnesses than there are active, approved Jehovah's Witnesses. And that's the real tragedy of it. And but the way it's going, many more are going to be stumbled. In fact, the whole organization is going to hit up against a huge stumbling block. And that, of course, will be when the real parousia commences. And what are Jehovah's Witnesses going to do about that? Well, many will be stumbled. Jesus said many will be stumbled, and brothers will hate one another, and family members or even have other family members put to death. So that hasn't happened yet, obviously, but I'm sure the words of Jesus will come true. He said, heaven and earth will sooner pass away than one of his words not come true, one of Jehovah's words. So here's the thing. I don't think once the parousia begins and this 3.5 year period is not going to be a time when we are allowed to repent and get our act straight. That's the period of the judgment. What did Jesus say? He said, in that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and expel demons in your name and perform many powerful works in your name? And then Jesus will reply, you know, get away from me, you workers of lawlessness. I never knew you. And so, but Jesus went on to say, it's not the one saying, Lord, Lord, will enter into the kingdom of the heavens. But what did he say? The one doing the will of my Father will receive the blessing. So that's the question. Are we doing the will of the Father? The Watchtower has explained to us what Jehovah's will is. We've studied the Bible and we've got a good idea. Jesus mentioned in his prayer to Jehovah on the night of his arrest, this means everlasting life. They're taking in knowledge of you and the one whom you sent forth, Jesus Christ. So we've all done that. We've taken in knowledge. We continue to take in knowledge, hopefully. It wasn't a one-time deal. The way it's worded in the New World Translation, Jesus said, taking in knowledge. So we come to know what God's will is, but then we have to do it. That's the purpose of Jehovah sponsoring an education campaign. It's to teach people how to do his will. So how do we do God's will if we're outside of what we recognize as his congregation? That's the challenge, isn't it? Now, the Watchtower has made it easy. They have this, you know, educational program. Let's face it, and many people would never have come to an understanding of the Bible without the program. You know, somebody comes to your door and, you know, invites you to study the Bible, you accept, and they give you all the material you need. If you don't have a Bible, they've got a Bible for you. They've got a book. If you don't know how to read, Jehovah's Witnesses will teach you how to read. You know, they have literacy programs, and it's amazing. They come to your home, sit down, and then we start going over the publications and looking up the cited scriptures, and you do that for a few months or a few years in some cases, and you really, really learn a lot. And then when you realize, boy, I've got to preach. That's God's will, right? We discern that. Jesus trained the apostles and 70 disciples and sent them out in twos. They went out knocking on doors, my friends. People say, oh, Jesus didn't send them out to knock on doors. Well, that's not true. He said, when you enter into a household, you know, give the householder a blessing. And if he accepts it, you know, stay there. A lot of dwellings in the Middle East didn't actually have doors, you know, like the open and close. They were just openings. And you would stand at the opening and say hello. And if someone was home, they'd invite you in or whatever, greet you. Anyway, so you didn't actually knock on the door. That was my point. But Jesus did send them out. And then his departing instructions were go and into people of all the nations, teaching them. And Jehovah's Witnesses obviously have taken that very seriously. And they make that aspect of it easy as well. You know, we have meetings arranged for field service. You're instructed in the theocratic school and the service meeting how to approach a householder. Here's the material to use. Here's a presentation. Here's how to overcome, you know, householders' objections. And then, you know, if you need a ride, boy, we got a little car group here for you. And, you know, they just make it so easy for us to do God's will in that respect. So that's the challenge. How can we do God's will if we're not part of a congregation? And it is obviously Jehovah's will to have a congregation. He said that, you know, in the letter of James, not many of you should be teachers, brothers, knowing we shall receive a heavier judgment. So that proves that there are elders whom Jehovah recognizes are authentic elders, and he will hold them accountable. But if we're not part of that congregation, then where are we? Where are we exactly? In the letter Paul wrote to Ephesians, he said that, I'll just quote the scripture, I don't have it open, but at the full limit of the appointed times, he would set up an administration at the full limit of the appointed times to gather together again the things in the heavens and the things upon the earth. Well, that word administration is taken from the Greek word oikonomia, which is where the English word economy comes from. It could also be translated as household or manager, because the manager of a household would have to manage a budget or an economy. So that scripture is not referring exactly to Christ's kingdom, but to an earthly administration. And Jesus referred to the slave whom his master appointed to give this domestic's food at the proper time. And that's within this household. So again, Jehovah has an organization, and he has servants, and he is going to hold them accountable, but at the same time, they're also doing his will, such as they are. The 12th chapter of Luke shows that even the slave that is judged to be faithful will ultimately be beaten with a few strokes for his ignorance. So the watchtower doesn't have a free ride, as they would have you believe. There is going to be an accounting for the household. But again, where does that leave us? I have to include myself in that. I'm not part of any congregational arrangement. And Jesus made the comment that he that does not gather with me is scattering. So again, Jesus is gathering into this household, the things in the heavens, those who are part of the heavenly class, and the things upon the earth, the great crowd who are destined to survive the great tribulation. So where do we stand? We can't claim to be in that household or in that congregation. And let's be honest, many have been stumbled. When we talk about the tyranny of the organization, the unkindness, the rules, and we've been stumbled by those things, so we no longer want to associate or subject ourselves to that. So then the question is there hope for the stumbled? Well, again, I mentioned that everyone eventually is going to be stumbled, and then in the book of Ezekiel, Jehovah describes how he's going to take over his congregation from the self-serving elders who did not look after the sheep and who allowed them to become plunder. And Jehovah is going to regather them under his King David, under Christ. But that's because the congregation is going to be shattered and scattered during this time of judgment. Either way, whether we're on the outside now or we're going to be stumbled in the future, the key is having faith. It says in Isaiah, Jehovah said to the Israelites, unless you people have faith, you will not be of long duration. Faith is the key. We have to have faith in God and in his promises, and faith that he will reward us for what we do. So I get back to this point. You know, are we doing God's will? Well, we're not doing it according to the Watchtower, not part of that program. But if we have faith in God, we want to do God's will, then we have to do something, don't we? We have to do something. We have to gather with Christ. If we never speak about the truth to other people, can we say that we are gathering, or are we scattering? If we have opportunities, and you know, like I say, it's not easy anymore. You know, you can't show up at Saturday and hop in a car group and go out in a ministry that way. But we all meet people, don't we? We have people in our lives. I use the internet here. I consider that my ministry, and I'm trying to do Jehovah's will. I do these little videos and write articles, and I comment on other forums. I try to get people thinking. I try to draw their, and I direct them to the Watchtower. And I know for a lot of you that is a stumbling point. But consider this. If you're one of Jehovah's Witnesses, as my friend here wrote me this note on Facebook, he said he still believes in the core doctrines, believes in the coming of Jesus. Well, why do you believe that? Who taught you that? Well, the Watchtower did. But now we've been stumbled. Do we throw out the truth? No, you didn't do that. You still believe it's the truth. So why not encourage other people to acquire the same knowledge that you had, which you consider to still be valuable? The coming of Jesus, the kingdom, and the core doctrine, the truth. That's the truth, yeah? We know the truth. So, wouldn't it be God's will that we continue to speak about the truth in whatever way is available to us? Just because we're not part of the Watchtower doesn't mean if we want to be considered, you know, Christians, to be Jehovah's Witnesses, maybe not with a capital J and a capital W, but we can still witness for Jehovah and the truth, that we have to do that. I encourage everyone to do that in some fashion. Jehovah will help you find a way to do that so you can have a clean conscience as doing his will. Phone is ringing here. Hold on, everybody. I'm going to shut this baby down. Okay, I'm back. Sorry about that. I should have turned my phone off, and it was nothing. Anyway, where was I? Doing God's will. Preaching is just, you know, part of it. Basically, if we're on the outside of this congregation and we want to have any hope of salvation, we have to keep our relationship with God alive. We have to live essentially as we did. You know, we have to pray. We have to, you know, read the Bible, keep our minds focused on spiritual things. And my friend here mentioned he had gotten involved in some worldly things, but he got out of it. Well, that's good. That's real good, because we don't want to be part of Satan's world. He can devour us so easily. And, you know, once we're part of the world, is Jehovah going to recognize us? Oh. So we have to, it's easier being part of the organization. I've said that over and over and over again. It's just, it's easier to serve Jehovah. They make it easier. But I know for some of us, it's not possible. I've had emailers very kindly say, well, you know, why don't you try and get reinstated? For me, that's not possible. I would have to disavow everything I've done. I'd have to take my book off the market. I'd have to stop doing these podcasts. I'd have to, I couldn't do that. I'd have to shave even. That would be horrible. No. Others, though, you're not in my situation, but again, you have your own issues. You know what they are. But we have to fight, put up a hard fight for the faith. We can't say to Jehovah, well, I was stumbled. The watchtower did this and that and that. Well, he's going to say, well, why didn't you continue to put faith in me and trust me and love me? So that's the point. If we want to have hope of salvation, we have to put our faith in God and Christ now. And that means that we have to walk in Christ's footsteps now and do everything we can to have a clean conscience with God, to keep close with God, to help other people have a relationship with God. That's God's will for us. And that's what we have to do. And that's what I'm trying to do. That's what I encourage other people to do. Just because we're on the outside doesn't mean that we're lost. I don't believe that. I don't want to, snuff out your smoldering flaxen wick. No, we have hope, but we also have to exercise faith. And what it says in James, faith without works is dead. So we have to do God's will. It comes back to that. Well, thank you, though. I hope I offered some encouragement there. I know that people need hope. And if we think we're doomed, and we're just going to give up, but that's not the case. I've got another question here. I hope my computer's whirring pretty loudly here, crunching all this data, and I hope it's not picking up on the microphone here. You know what? I think I might shut down here just for a sec, allow it to catch up on its processing here, and I'll log back on here and read this other question. Hold on a second. Okay, I am back again. That thing's cooled down a little bit. The problem is I have my laptop on a desk here, and it's right under the microphone, so when the processor really gets whirring. My computer actually got so hot the other day. I had it on my lap, and it was really getting warm. So I put a pillow under it, and I was typing away, and I heard a pop, and the battery actually, it bowed the casing out. It warped the casing. I was like, it was going to pop out. I've had the Mac a couple of years, so I figured it was time to replace the battery before something really bad happened. But anyway, I've got another question here. He writes that when he first started reading, my side about the destruction of the watchtower made perfect sense. He says, but I always imagined that the destruction would come as a result of the establishment of the final worldwide tyrannical government. However, I've been reading from the book of Luke today, and specifically towards the end of chapter 21, where it says that, furthermore, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by encamped armies, then know that the desolating of her is drawn near. Then let those in Judea begin fleeing to the mountains. And then he says, furthermore, in verse 25, it reads, also there will be signs in the sun, moon, and stars, and on earth anguish of nations, not knowing the way out because of the roaring of the sea and its agitation. And then his observation is, it is interesting to note that these verses say armies and nations, as if Jesus was implying that these things would occur before the establishment of a single world government. And then he says, and since all these things, he says, and in verse 27, he says, and then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud. So it seems to me that in light of these passages, that the Watchtower Society, presumably that is what is represented by Jerusalem and Judea, the Watchtower is destined to fall before the parousia of Christ and the establishment of the final world government. In light of this, do you have any insight on what the catalyst for the destruction of the Watchtower might be? Or am I wrong in thinking that the Watchtower here is represented by Jerusalem and Judea, and it will be, in fact, be destroyed by the emerging final government? Well, for one thing, yes, I will answer that question directly. Yes, I believe that the Watchtower and specifically the Anointed are represented by the Judea. The holy place will be trampled by a disgusting thing. But the question involved, because it uses armies and nations, plural, and then the way you view it, then that could not be in reference to a one world government, since it would just be considered a nation, singular nation, as was Babylon when it conquered Jerusalem, and a single army. But that's not the way to look at it, I do not think. First, to address the point, I think, most simply, in the 11th chapter of Revelation, where it refers to the two witnesses, the wild beast that comes up out of the abyss will make war against them and kill them. And that occurs during that 42-month period. So after the beast goes down, when it emerges, then it'll have a 3.5-year period. And that's when it will conquer and kill Jehovah's anointed ones. Now, the Watchtower will obviously go down before that, but that will not be the end of Jehovah's anointed congregation. They'll be disciplined by that, but they'll also be strengthened and renewed and then carry on the fight on a whole new level. That's what Jesus is referring to in the 10th chapter, where Jesus hand John the little scroll and says, prophesy again to kings and nations. So, yeah, there'll be a whole different work that will go on during that time, and a judgment work, an announcing of imminent doom from Jehovah. So, but as far as the plurality of armies and nations, the way to understand that is, well, look at ancient Babylon. They conquered, Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon conquered numerous nations, but then they were incorporated into the Babylonian Empire, and they essentially lost their freedom, but they were still nations. They were called satrapies, and Nebuchadnezzar had 120 satrapies, and he would place a satrap over each of these regions. I think in the British Empire had dozens of nations under its control, and they called them colonies, right? And they would place a viceroy over those nations. So like India was part of the British Empire up until 1946 or something like that. And it had a viceroy over their nation. But India was still a separate nation. It was controlled by London. Same thing today. There is really a financial empire over the nations today. A banker's empire, you might call it. But they're still nations, and they each have their individual armies. So what will occur is when the Anglo-American system goes down, and it will collapse the whole system, and nations will then be forced to relinquish their independence and their sovereignty to this new empire that will arise from the ashes. The Watchtower will probably go down when the financial system crashes, because obviously they are like any other corporation. They're a publishing corporation, basically. And we have to separate that. There's a spiritual aspect. That's the governing body, you know, has domain over that. But then there's the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society of New York, Inc., and all that. And that has a board of directors that is completely independent of the governing body. That's run as a business. They've got the lawyers, you know, the purchasing agents and all of that, PR department. They're a corporation, and they require millions and millions of dollars to function as a publishing corporation. When the financial system goes down, what are they going to do? I don't know. They probably, you know, go out of business. So, yeah, that's, you know, in the letter of James, he was writing to Christians who were dealing unjustly with their brothers, and James said, you're storing up wrath, and, you know, your gold and your silver are going to rust away in the day of the last days, he said, and it's going to be eaten up as if by fire. So whatever wealth we have and the Watchtower, it's going to go poof. They're already, a couple weeks ago, the guys at the Federal Reserve, Bernanke, he promised, you know, all the bankers are holding their breath. You know, what are you going to do? We're sinking. Well, he said the Fed is committed. They're going to buy up all of the worthless mortgage-backed securities. And that amounts to several trillion. They already bought a bunch of other worthless stuff. They call them toxic assets. And that was a couple years ago. It kept the financial system from blowing out. But now they're ready for another infusion of trillions and trillions from the Fed. And this, many of you know this, it will set in motion a hyperinflation. Once hyperinflation starts, it can very quickly escalate, as it did in Germany in 1923. It took about 6 months, and the German currency, the Reichsmark, became worthless, completely worthless. People, it had more value as, tinder to start a fire in the fireplace or the cook stove than it did as a currency. So that's probably what's going to happen to the U.S. dollar, and the Watchtower simply will not be able to function as a publishing corporation. And, of course, it will lose all credibility anyway when, you know, nation rises against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and there's food shortages and pestilence. They can't go back and say, well, yeah, this all started in 1914. That's not going to work. They are going to be humiliated. This whole thing's going to blow up in their face. Their whitewashed wall, what Ezekiel called it, is going to collapse. So, but the new world government, or the one world government, it doesn't mean that there will not be nations. There will still be the same nations. They will just not be independent nation states. They will be under the yoke of this tyrannical government. Probably issue some form of currency. The bankers are going to be behind this one world government. So when their currency becomes worthless, they're going to be controlling the real stuff, you know, the gold, the silver, the commodities, the food and oil and all of that. Strategic assets that people and nations need to live. Don't let them have the paper. They can choke on that. We're going to control the necessities of life. And if you want to live, well, you'll have to do things our way. And so let's say that the Watchtower goes down when the financial system blows, and then if they try to resurrect, then this tyrannical system will be in place. You remember back in 1916, the Watchtower, it did go through some pretty serious persecution. But even before that time, they were in Pennsylvania, and they were wanting to move back to Brooklyn. And I remember at the time during World War I, coal was being rationed. And Rutherford was unsure whether, you know, the because they were already under investigation. Some said that they, you know, Bethel was aiding the enemy and had a secret radio transmitter up on and all this goofy stuff. But Rutherford said, well, you know, we have to put in a requisition for coal. Let's ask them for a whole lot. He said, make it a good one so that if we get it, then we'll know that Jehovah was behind it. And Jehovah, you know, opened a door for us. So that's what happened. Well, let's say that, you know, there's other issues like that, that, you know, the Watchtower tries to stay afloat and Jehovah's not behind them. He will not help them. And the government suppresses them in some way or another and doesn't give them necessary permits or whatever. Maybe religions will have to be licensed or something. You know, I mean, I have no insight into what could happen. I just know a lot of different things could happen. So, but once this, you know, this government takes over, it will control all the armies of the nations. They'll be brought under the authority of this central government. It's not that there won't be nations or armies. I hope I answered that. It's interesting that in the last chapter, the 20th chapter of Revelation, after the 1,000 years have ended and Satan is let loose, and it says he goes forth to the corners of the earth to gather the nations. So there'll be nations at that time. We shouldn't think of it in terms of political nations as now. I think in some respects, nations is in contrast to God's people and God's nation. The nations in Revelation says Gog and Magog and the nations will come against the holy city. So that's in contrast with Jehovah's kingdom. The nations in anguish will be in contrast to Jehovah's people who will not be fearful. They raise their heads and stand erect because they realize then that their deliverance is near. So the nations, I think, shouldn't think of it in terms of a political nation, but an alliance, a grouping of people that outside of God's arrangement. All right. Well, just had these two things here, and boy, I gabbed on 37 minutes. Well, thank you for your listening attention. Thank you for your thoughts. And I'm going to be traveling, going back to the United States for a couple of weeks. Probably won't be doing a program. In fact, I know I won't be because I'm not going to take my laptop with me. I've got another computer back there, but I've leave my mic here and everything. I might do a little video back in the eWatchman studio there. You know, I did the last little video I did with a little handheld video camera. I did another one today. I just haven't uploaded it to YouTube. So, also, I might say in closing, yeah, I've been working on my website trying to get it optimized. I mean, if you know of my angst and struggles, you know, I see no point in writing and publicizing if your website is so hard to find. So the last few months, I've really been pumping. And my site, for a brief while, was appearing on page one of Google and Yahoo for key search terms like Jehovah's Witnesses. It's a constant struggle, though, to keep it going and keep it pumped up. But anyway, why did I bring that up? Oh, I decided to do a regular series on the book of Isaiah and basically, excuse me, go through the whole book of Isaiah and considering, you know, the Watchtower's commentary on it. And so I'll be doing regular updates on that every few days or so, partly for the reason to give my site some content, you know, but also because I've been wanting to do a piece on Isaiah for a long time, and I just thought this would be the way to do it, to serialize it, you know, rather than one big, long article. Anyway, that's what I've been up to. And I wish you all the best. As I always say, may Jehovah bless your search for the truth. I mean that most sincerely. Thank you for listening.